Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Copyright. Oh, we'll get sued. No, we'll get sued. Hello there, and welcome back to the Phantom Zone, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy. If you like what you hear today, you can listen to our other episodes on a whole host of nerdy subjects on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and SoundCloud. My name is Toby, and today I am joined for his long overdue return, the man, the myth, and the all-round legend, Ian.
I really wanted Finn Lizzy, the bang, but again, we'll get sued.
So. Well, I was going to say, yeah, we can't get messy around like that. But it's good to have you back. How are you doing, my friend?
I have returned from my pilgrimage. I'm good. I'm all right. I'm doing well. I have come back and I've been listening away as well. Great episodes.
Thank you very much.
I very much enjoyed listening to the Batman animated film one. That was great. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. We enjoyed watching them. I hope you've been watching along with us.
I have, actually. Yeah, oh, nice. I have. And, you know, The Dark Knight. We have released the one on The Dark Knight.
Part one.
Yeah. I didn't know if that one was up yet. But I was like, have I listened to something in my dreams that they did? I was like, did I have a fever dream about?
I mean, listening to us always is just a dream.
It's always a bit hallucinogenic. But I think Dark Knight Returns, the animated film, is great. I think it's really, really good. And I think it catches the comic really well. And as I say, it's before Frank Miller went a bit... I mean, that's again.
We've done the Frank Miller dance before.
Yeah. Let's not go there.
Well, then, we've got something to look forward to in part two. So, chit chat achieved. So, on today's podcast, in light of it being May and May the 4th and Revenge of the 5th and all things sturdy for sturdy Star Wars,
Revenge of the 5th.
It is Revenge of the 5th, and I guess you can kind of... Oh, no, you've got to put... And you could kind of push Revenge of the 6th. I think past that...
You can kind of push the whole month. Think of just something for every single one of them. You can do
Of course. But in light of it being May and all things Star Wars, May is also the anniversary, the 40th anniversary this year, of Return of the Jedi. So what we're deciding to do today is do a retrospective review of Return of the Jedi.
Love it.
For its 40th anniversary of the OG. Okay. So we'll start off with a little sort of initial thoughts and our first feelings of Star Wars, and then we'll go for a little bit of a critical review. I know you've got a few interesting topics to go over your opinions, but
Ian.
I'm preparing myself. Well, everyone kind of knows my Star Wars opinion. But have you got any sort of first memories of Return of the Jedi, sort of when you first watched anything sort of...
I do, actually. I remember very well, actually.
Ooh, okay.
That my dad had... Do you know the golden VHS of Star Wars?
Yes, I had the golden and the silver, because I am just that extra.
He had the golden VHS of Star Wars, and I remember watching all three of them.
Yeah.
And I actually think Star Wars is my earliest film memory.
Yes.
I remember watching that on my dad's huge TV. Do you remember those TVs at the massive
They were just block? Giant blocks, weren't they?
Yeah. Like, forget Tetris. You could just do it with the TV. And I remember just watching on that. And I think the memory that sticks out the most, weirdly, is one of the most mundane scenes in Return of Jedi, which is when Luke and Darth Vader are together on the planet moon of Endor.
Mundane?
Right. No, hear me out. There's a bit where they just stood together and it's like silent.
Yeah.
And it's in my brain, I remember being like, oh, this is great. But now I'm looking back on it, one of them should have been like, yeah, it's kind of awkward, this, isn't it?
That's a nice little snippet for later of your critiques of Return of the Jedi.
It's not a critique. It's just I don't remember the lightsaber duel scene as a kid, is one of the most iconic ones, and it's like such a great scene. I don't remember the It's a Trap, which again, iconic.
A meme bait, this movie.
It is really. But I don't remember the Ewoks either as a kid. I just remember this random bit. Where they're just, it's when he first gets to, when he's handed himself in to be prisoner.
Yeah.
And he's like, the guy's like, oh, this guy's handed himself in, but I don't think he's telling the full truth. And then his Darth Vader's just stood there going, yeah, I remember this guy. I chopped off his hand. Yeah, I did that. Yeah, that's good. Classic times.
We have very different memories of this same scene. Which I'll go into later.
I remember that very well. But then obviously in subsequent years and as growing up, I've watched the trilogy again and again. Yeah. And unfortunately, actually, that's a question. Are we talking about the bloody George Lucas editing or the original?
We'll get into that. Okay. But it was just, I remember your first memories and initial sort of thoughts and reactions to it.
And I remember watching it as I grew up. And it is... you know, the chapter end of the original trilogy, which I think is the best trilogy. I think everybody does.
Yeah.
I hope everybody does.
100%.
And I won't go too much into the critique of it or anything because I don't want to spoil too much. So it's going to come. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it. It's a good end to a great trilogy. You know, that's
nice.
Before we get into it.
We'll start the friendliness now and then it gets to the nail towards the end. Just becomes a slugfest. Well, I mean, my first sort of Return of the Jedi memory is, my parents had all the Star Wars videos recorded off TV to start with before they had the special editions, because that was sort of somewhere in the 90s where those gold ones and silver ones came out, because I think the gold ones were the special editions and the silvers were the original takes. But my earliest memory of Star Wars is it was the only Star Wars I could ever watch, because my mum always had this arrangement that, yes, you can watch a film, but you have to agree with your sister.
Oh, and I thought you were going to say because Empire's too scary.
No. No, so you can watch a film, but you have to agree. And I always wanted to watch Star Wars. You know, it was always a Star Wars film.
Yeah.
But the compromise was that it had to be something that my sister agreed with. So the only one I could ever get her to routinely watch was Return of the Jedi, because I'd say, Bryony, do you want to watch a Star Wars film? And she said, yes, the one with the teddy bears.
Okay.
I have a both love and hate relationship with the Ewoks, because it was the only was the only Star Wars film I could watch routinely and regularly. So it's probably the film I've watched the most of all of the trilogy.
Okay.
But I mean, Return of the Jedi, I still have huge fond memories. Mm-hmm. And I think, as everybody who listens to this podcast knows, I kind of go in with an emotional bias when it comes to Star Wars, because these are the films that spearheaded me into being the big nerd that I am today.
I'm expecting us to fall out by the end of the episode. not because I have anything awful to say, but just because of your defense mechanism.
Instead of criticism, it's my Death Star button. You'll find this is fully armed and operational.
A criticism of Star Wars? Get off here!
I'll never hear of it. Yes, but I guess to start off with that, let's do a little synopsis of Return of the Jedi. So it's set 1 year after the events of Empire Strikes Back. So we pick up with Luke Skywalker and our favorite bands of rebels trying to save Han Solo from the evil clutches of the vile Jabba the Hutt.
I really want to do the music as the gold letters are going.
Boot in, you... you cretin. As the text rise, the goal, isn't it?
Yes.
Scrolling in.
I'd love you to just be doing the audio for the
I should have just read that, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Should have just read the crawl. But then we'd be here for an hour because I'd have all the inaccuracies. Yeah, so you're going to go save Jabba. I'm going to do the summary version now. Save Han Solo from Jabba. And all the while, the evil emperor has appeared from his Coruscant cave and has come to retroactively build the... push the empire into the second Death Star, and the saving of Darth Vader, the epic conclusion to the saga of originally just three films, which had now turned into nine. Can we believe it? And all the auxiliary Star Wars films and everything like that. So how crazy it's been in 40 years. So initial thoughts on Return of the Jedi. Let's do the deep dive now.
This is the moment. Like, when you, so just again, a look behind. I feel like whenever I'm on this, I let the listeners know a lot.
You've got to peel back that curtain.
Yeah. So Toby earlier sent me like a list of like, like a vague plan, I guess, of what we're talking about, a synopsis, your notes sort of thing. And I looked at it and there was a particular bit, which
it least favorite part?
No. There's another bit, which I was like, that's really funny. Let me get it up, which was, this is great radio. This is great podcast.
I was going to say, Chris, we can cut this at a dead point. Yeah,
yeah, cut that. Least favorite part, nothing really.
Well, I have bits to talk about, but I wasn't going to summarize it all on there.
And I was like, we have a very different vibe for this film.
Well, I remember your response was, we've got different opinions here.
So I think it's broadly like a good film. But like I'd say our ratings of films have so many different ways of rating it. But I'd say it's like a C+. Like it's when
we're throwing in the alphabet grading system now.
Like you've got Empire Strikes Back and A New Hope, which I think are both A's to A star. They're both really good films.
Yeah.
And then I think Return of the Jedi just kind of like dips a lot in terms of like, I feel like it's the one that's most aimed for children, which is why it's interesting that you say it's the one that you compromise with because of the Ewoks.
Yeah.
And I also think it's the one that's like got the most sort of like exposition in it. It's like it takes a lot. Once we get to the space battle at the end, which is what we all were waiting for, it's great.
Yeah.
But it takes so long to get there. It takes so long. And like there's good stuff in there. I'm not saying it's bad. That's why it's a C+. But there's a lot of other stuff that I'm like, I could totally... It's 2 hours as well. I'm like, you could definitely have cut this to be like a good hour and a half. Like a tight hour and a half.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I initially...
Oh, I thought you were about to be like, you're banished. Anyway.
It's in the back of the mind. I'm doing this for radio. I'm being objective.
The podcast comes off. I hate you, Ian.
I'll channel my Christian... We're done professionally. Well, I've always seen Return of the Jedi is kind of two films put together. You've got the opening with Jabba's palace and the Rancor, the saving of Han Solo, and then sort of the culmination of that story, or the conclusion of that story, is the Sarlacc pit, the fight in Tatooine, and then the saving and moving on from Tatooine and the killing and destroying of Jabba and his sail barge.
Yes.
And then after that, you've then got the second movie, which is more sort of the rebel espionage into the taking down the Death Star and sort of deactivating the shield generator. And then all the while that sort of main plot point is going on, you've got the internal sort of emotional struggle between father and son with Luke and Vader. And then the Emperor is sort of the overall bad guy. And I feel like you've got those two, because they've kind of got two central villains. At the pickup of the movie and at the end of the movie, yes, the Emperor sort of introduced earlier on, or at least alluded to with Darth Vader, because the opening to this is probably one of my favorites of the trilogy, with Darth Vader arriving on the shuttle from the Death Star
into the
construction. Because I think the cinematography in this one was brilliant, and I feel like they kind of emptied the kitchen sink on all the effects with this one.
Yeah, and they used a lot of paintings as well, which is
Really cool. I mean, they've done that throughout.
Really good.
I mean, the map paintings are great, and I've always thought Return of the Jedi is just unabashedly Star Wars, because Empire Strikes Back kind of takes the first A New Hope's storyline, makes it a little bit more mature, a little darker.
It's definitely the best one.
Exactly. Well, it is personally my favorite, but the...
It's because it is. It's the best
one. It is the best one. But it takes those themes and makes them darker, and it adds a little bit more maturity to it.
Bad guys win, you know.
Well, exactly. And then in Return of the Jedi, I feel like it takes everything from A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back that we've taken on, and it dials up to 11. So instead of the cantina scene, which is a short section, they make a whole first half of it with Jabba's palace and then the sail barge, because it is just a plethora of puppetry, animatronics.
Obviously in the original.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in the original, and they go crazy with the CGI singing crew.
The puppetry in the original is like... Jabba, for example, is just insane. Like,
well,
that
he's like five people controlling
Jabba. It's so crazy when you think about it. Like, they made something like that and made it actually work and look living, you know. The CGI, like, band is one... We can't obviously swear on this one because we're on UK film, but it's like actual... It's so
you can't think of something to say that's not a swear word when it comes to your criticism.
It's like... Yeah, it's awful. It's so bad. Like, why? I think that weirdly is also like, you know, you're talking about Return being the antithesis, I guess, of, you know, Star Warsism dialed up.
Yeah.
That is also like everything wrong with George Lucas. Like, just that scene is everything that's wrong to come in the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
It's just everything that's wrong.
Well, I want to touch on the. Well, I want to touch on the special editions sort of towards the end in terms of our negative reactions to that, because I've got a few bits that I'm also quite critical of, particularly with the Disney Plus version.
Okay. Let's hold that. But I will say with Jabba's Palace, so yeah, it's great. It's really good in terms of the cinematography and the animatronics. The Rancor's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's real dumb. It's really stupid.
What, the Rancor is, or the movie?
No, the movie.
I was going to say, the Rancor was a beast. What were you expecting?
Leave him alone. No, like, the plan is really stupid. Like, it's fun. It's a fun time. But this is why I'm like, it feels more kiddie. Like, Luke Skywalker is a total badass in this film. Like, his first introduction on the screen is him, like, choking those Gamorrean guards.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. It's like, oh, God, maybe he's gone a little bit too sinister there. Maybe it's, you know. But, like, his plan is, like, I'm going to send R2 and C-3PO in to barter with Jabba to then get captured by Jabba. But it's okay, because I wanted that to happen. Lando's already in there somehow. Cool. Then... he sends Leia in dressed as a bounty hunter, who then has a thermal detonator who's like, I'm going to blow up this place if you don't give me what I want. Which, if I was Jabba the Hutt, I'd be like, all right then, cool. You're dead too.
Into the pit you go.
Yeah. And then she gets captured after we find out it is Leia. Good reunion with Han, who's blind and has been released from his like metal seal. And then Luke strolls in as if this was like, yeah, I'm meant to do this the whole time. He tries to pull a blaster, then he falls into the Rancor pit. And then it's all like, almost like he knew Jabba was going to take him to the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
And like, they all nod as if like, yeah, we knew this was going to happen. And I was like, what? Like, how do you know that was going to... Also, what if Jabba was just like, I'm going to kill you. I'm just going to kill you now. I don't really care. Like... I've got other stuff to do today, you know? I'm a busy guy. I'm a big slug man. I've got stuff to do.
Well, he's a crime lord. He's a crime lord. And as we've realized from the Book of Boba Fett, it clearly is not an easy job.
Yeah, no, it's not. No, clearly.
Being a daimyo is no easy feat.
He suddenly has time to go out to the Sarlacc pit to do a ritual killing? Like...
Well, he's got an audience to entertain, and they just killed his Rancor. So what else has he got? He's got a big pit cocoon. Well, that's not very showmanshipy, and he's a crime lord, a big slug crime lord. He's got to entertain Salacious Crumb and Bib Fortuna and Boba. I mean, he's got Boba Fett there. He's got to impress him.
Oh, don't get me started, Boba Fett in this. Like, what a... Again, I mean, I can't swear, but what a terrible way to die. Like, this isn't a cool way to die.
That takes all the hype of the character and the mystique of Boba Fett and just completely derails him. But I agree with you. Like, Luke Skywalker, in this one, I feel that his character and the relationship with Darth Vader and the Emperor, those three that are kind of the...
It pushes this film along.
Yeah, like, they're the central theme. Yes. And I feel like all the other characters kind of get put by the wayside in favor of this. But I guess in terms of the overarching story, particularly in terms of how George Lucas long-term pushes this down the line, it makes sense. Because even like Han Solo becomes the antithesis of his sort of comedic aspects. He becomes far more comedic in this. And the sort of fiery temper of Princess Leia becomes somewhat diminished in favor of being a lovesick Han Solo fan. You know, she softens a lot more in this one. You know, she's more maternal with Wicket the Ewok. Mm-hmm. And sort of, I am mother to this bear.
God, you are such a nerd, man. Wicket the Ewok. Who bloody knows that?
Me. It's Warwick Davis, and it's Wicket the Ewok, and I know Tebow, and I know many others, and I'm not going to go into that because, yes, I am that nerdy. Okay. But my point remains. I feel, this is not an unbiased podcast. I feel, Leia is quite softened. C-3PO and R2-D2 have a little bit more to do. And Chewbacca, again, he goes for the ride. But Luke Skywalker is sort of the through line with this.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also agree.
But he's very reactionary. His plans,
it does make sense.
It doesn't. But it's very reactionary. I think in that set, I don't necessarily think he knew that he was going to the pit of Carcoon, the Sarlacc pit. You know, I think, which I got them all.
Jesus Christ.
I feel that it was more along the lines that he was prepared for anything. And it was a very reactionary plan. We'll get us all into the building. That's the first step. Then everything else is kind of just a... Well, yeah, but at any point he could have popped it out and sent it to Luke. I think just at that moment it was like, well, we've kind of got to do this now. Well, it doesn't look as cool when you bounce off a springboard and you've already got it in your pocket. It gave R2-D2 something to do.
I feel
he was the inside man. Every time he was whistling, I felt him just being, I'm in.
I totally agree with you that I think all of the other characters are kind of a bit sidelined. I think the performances aren't as good as well in this one as they were in the last two. I think that's not their fault either. I think actually the director in this one is far more preoccupied with the big sequences because they do look great, like the big sequences. But there's there's very odd like performances from Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford in particular. Their line delivery is almost like quite weird, but it's fine. Like I'm not expecting Shakespeare when I go to Star Wars, but like it's the first two I think had really great performances.
Yeah.
And particularly Empire Strikes Back. But I will say, you know, oh my God, my mind's gone blank. What's his face? Who plays Luke Skywalker?
Mark Hamill.
Thank you. Mark Hamill is great, doing a really good time. He's doing, and that's why I feel like the focus was probably on making sure his performance, his scenes, and his story was done as well as they could, which has kind of sidelined some of the other stuff. But to loop back just briefly to Jabba, and I guess we can proceed. But I get what you're saying. You know, it looks cool, but I feel like some of it is like, kids, buy these toys. You know, like, rather than this is what would be the best story to tell. Like, the barge going out there, the whole scene, Tatooine Lando, get Tatooine Leia, rather than being like, this is but because Empire and Return and A New Hope kind of feel more like a good narrative progression, whereas the storyline in Jabba's Palace, although it's the good action, it kind of is just, it's just weird. It's just done in a really weird way. Like
it's very trilogy tropey because, you know, part a big thing with trilogies and particularly the final movies in the trilogy is trying to bring it back to the beginning. And
yeah, and they end up back in Tatooine.
Well, exactly. And it's never more evident. And it's something that the franchise on the whole has had a very difficult time to move on from,
yeah,
which is retreading the past. You know, it doubles down. So it,
speaking of, who are you?
Rey.
Rey who?
Rey Skywalker.
Well, I didn't know we had to be so specific. Do you want my social pin number as well?
Yeah, yeah. I love the idea that the woman's like, who the hell's that? I don't know who that is. What are you talking about?
but it is, and it they go back to Tatooine, and the big threat again is a bigger, badder Death Star, but this time it's unfinished, and the Emperor's here himself
as well. I don't like see this right. If we're progressing away from Jabba's palace,
So we move on from Jabba's palace.
It's got some good stuff.
Yeah,
but I think
Luke Skywalker goes off to Dagobah again, yeah, and then Han and the rest of the rebels go to
exposition. I forgot about that bit. It just kind of, because it literally goes in my head, because there's so much that happens in this film that I just think is so irrelevant. In my head, it goes, and I watched this the other day as well, and my brain still does this. It goes Jabba's palace, then immediately we're on Endor. Like, that's my brain.
Oh no, there's a huge bit in the
middle.
There's
so much in the middle of boring stuff. There's so much boring exposition. Like,
I shouldn't have hosted this. I should have been fighting you.
Well, we can fight, but like, I what I mean is, like, so Dagobah, we go back to Yoda. Great, yeah. I love Yoda. That's so good. Like, and all of Yoda, and then him passing away and like evaporating into dust. You know, that's great. That's what happened, right? He evaporates into dust. He becomes
less the dust. He just vanishes.
Becomes dust.
Luke's just like, I've got some Yoda in my mouth.
Yeah. But yeah, he joins the Force. He becomes one with the Force. And that's a great scene. But then we have Alec Guinness come back.
Goes to Obi-Wan to
and gives the
do some more exposition dump.
Yeah, why did we do that? Like, well,
It's getting Alec Guinness back for one. Plus, I guess it kind of challenges Obi-Wan on the lie. I guess without that, it'd have been like, well, okay, well, what about whatever Obi-Wan said in A New Hope about Darth Vader betraying and murdering your father?
Well, he murdered him in a way, Luke. And I was just being facetious.
And then we get the poignant.
It's a certain point of view.
Oh, yeah. What is that line?
From a certain point of view.
Great delivery, but...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Well, and I think that this one as well, Return of the Jedi, is very much where retroactive retconning just becomes more prevalent within the saga. Because you got A New Hope, which sets the tone and creates the lore. And then Empire Strikes Back continues that, moves the story on. Yes. And then Return of the Jedi tries to bring it all together and then add some new revelations. Like, the most poignant ones being obviously confirming that Vader is in fact Luke Skywalker's father, but then also he has it's also that Princess Leia is in fact his twin sister.
Yeah, that's the elephant in the room. It's a weird one, isn't it?
And it's, you know, now
it's weird.
Now it's such a ingrained part of the canon, you just don't think about it. But at the time, that must have been so hard to just get your head around.
Yeah.
Because also moving forward, when you think about the prequels, some of that section, particularly when Luke confronts, but discusses this with Leia, and they sort of reconcile that, she also understands that their family as well. And he says to her, like, what was your first memories of your mother?
I thought you were going to say, he says to her, why did you make out with
her? What, do you remember that kiss? That wasn't okay. And Obi-Wan, why didn't you stop that? You know, if you could be a ghost, like, don't kiss your sister.
Don't do that.
Don't kiss your sister. Shut up, Obi-Wan.
Hand in between their faces.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
But don't do that. But then she goes on about how, I remember my mother. She seems sad. But that couldn't have been her mother from Alderaan.
No.
So it couldn't have been Padme because they'd just been newborns. And I don't know what you can do with the Force, but I don't know if it allows you to be or have total recall from your birth. So, maybe. I mean, and she would have been very sad because she was actively dying. So,
yeah, that does make you sad. Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Bum you out a little bit. So yeah. That one's a bit difficult to swallow. But I guess, you know, in hindsight, you kind of learn to live with it because it's not as bad as what comes after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, well, true. But I think it's like, again, it's sort of that retconning thing. It Return of the Jedi, although I do enjoy it, it does feel more of the, like, not messy in a bad way, but like maybe not fully thought through.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that is doubled down in the prequels because, as you just highlighted, there's massive contradictions. There's a lot of issues that make it not well connecting to the originals.
This is where I kind of think that Return of the Jedi is almost multiple movies in one.
Yeah.
And I feel like almost you could have fit an episode 4. Like the Jabba's thing could have been 3.
Yes.
And then a 4 could have been the Endor Death Star.
Yes, I agree with that. And it would give more time because, again, sidelining other characters is an issue. We've jumped a huge bit, so I imagine we will jump back. But
yeah,
with Leia talking to Luke, because it is very closely linked to Luke finding out that Leia is his sister. That's all true. Leia just like doesn't even address the fact that Darth Vader's her dad, which is like a huge thing. Like that's a massive revelation. And like,
yeah, oh, you mean the dude that tortured me and blew up my planet?
Blew up your planet, killed your...
That's not a cool dude.
Yeah, and it's like that. It's weird because Leia is like an integral character to the Star Wars mythos, but
yeah,
I just feel she didn't
get and made more important with this revelation.
Yeah,
so to kind of dismiss that
because
it's weird. It kind of brings back to what we were saying about how the rest of the characters, whilst had important moments, they were far more sidelined in this than they ever were in the previous films.
Which is a shame because that revelation is
huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's like world-shattering. The guy who you've been fighting for God knows how long as the Rebel Alliance and the leader of the Rebel Alliance, or one of them, is actually your father and has done despicable things.
Yeah. Because she was in the fight far longer than Luke was.
Yeah, way longer. And she's just like, oh, you know, I kind of always do. And it's like, then why did we make out? Why did we do that?
Yeah. But yeah, so going back a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. After Dagobah, you know, the revelations come, Yoda passes. We come back to the Rebel meeting room.
And exposition.
Exactly. And the exposition dump delivered by Mon Mothma.
This film is so much exposition.
And many Bothans died to give us this information for the second Death Star.
Which is weird. Because again,
what is a Bothan?
What is a Bothan? And two, Rogue One, or Brogue One, as I like to call it, doesn't have Bothans in it. And that is how we get the information. Unless they're all Bothans, and that's just her slang for the people in Rogue One. Classic.
Well, no, because that's the New Hope, isn't it? Rogue One is a New Hope prequel.
Oh, is that New One prequel? Well, there you go. Look at me showing how much not of a nerd I am. I thought that was them. I thought that was the same people.
No, no, no. That's why Princess Leia at the end of it is in her New Hope white gown.
Looking weird. Yeah, looking strange. So let me get this straight.
Don't worry. I will shepherd you through your Star Wars journey.
Thank you very much. Thank you,
I'm
my shepherd.
All things
I
Star Wars.
Shall not want. We've many Bothans have died getting us this information. So the Empire's plan is to build a bigger thing of the thing that just got blown up, but with the same problem.
Well, it's a slightly different problem. And they
a bigger
have
a problem.
Well, the other addition is that the whole reason that they go out and set out on this mission is that not only do they have the second Death Star, but this time what they need to do is it's a twofold plan because they can't just push the kill switch button that they had before.
I feel
because
like
they've
I'm
got
in that meeting. I feel like I'm in the meeting.
Well, I'm here ready with my clipboard of Star Wars details. But
it's died to bring us this information.
I am the Bothan and I'm ready to die for it. But there, it's deactivating the shield generator. You know, that's the plan of Han and his crew.
I like how you go, that's the new thing, Ian. Come on.
That's the new thing. Well, yes, the new MacGuffin. It's how they split the heroes. You've got your land and space battles and then the internal emotional struggle with Luke and Vader.
Yeah, cool.
And the Emperor.
Totally fine. But could we have done that without a second Death Star?
Could have done. But
I just
we didn't,
think it's
and
a bit
we're
weird.
Here.
We're here.
We're here now. There is a second. I 100% agree. I mean, and then it further adds to the insult when you get to Force Awakens and the third one.
An even bigger one.
Yeah. It's a planet size, or an even bigger planet sized one.
It's like, what? Maybe the Empire just really loves big space stations. They're just really into that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair. I mean, maybe the Emperor is compensating for something with having big space balls and planetary destroying equipment.
And I mean, those Star Destroyers, what do they look like?
Exactly. Just flying saying. Doritos. That's what they remind me of. Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah, no, okay. Like, it's not awful, but I just think, again, it just doesn't. I don't know.
It doesn't live up to the previous two.
Yeah. I think what carries this film a lot, and again, it's future talking. We're going to be talking about this in a bit. Yeah. But that last sequence really makes up for a lot of this film.
Yes.
The last sequence of this film is really, it's like A-Star stuff again.
The third act is
so good.
It's superb. And that's sort of the best bits I want to sort of gel into in a minute, but we've got to get there.
But all of this stuff before, I'm like...
The next part that we've got to get through is the glorious Ewok introduction. We get Han Solo and his crew.
Do we like this film? I'm just saying.
I do. But I'm channeling... I'm just matching your energy, Ian.
I'm sorry.
So you get Lando and his crew, Niam Nub, they're off with the Millennium Falcon. They're going to lead Admiral Ackbar and crew against the Death Star, whilst Han Solo, Leia, Chewbacca, R2-D2, and C-3PO and their merry little band go to take down the shield generator on the planet moon of Endor.
Yep.
On that little journey, you have one of the most epic bike scenes put to cinema. I thought that's the Endor speeder bike is awesome.
It's good. It's definitely good. I think... Oh man, you're going to hate me so much. I think it is a bit dated now in terms of what it looks like. I think even in comparison to, say, Empire, I think it doesn't look... even in comparison to some of the stuff in this film, the special effects I don't think look as good, but it's still great. Like, especially in comparison to some of the things that are coming out now... like, it still is really good, and it's very well done, and, like, it has a lot of tension. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
It's okay. My silence is...
your silence, I was like, he's not happy. It's the first time you've gone.
It's all good. I won't challenge you on that.
Very good, but I think it is starting to show its age a bit, but, God, it's 40 years old.
So I was going to say, so do the saga on a whole, you know. Yeah,
it's 40 years old.
Yeah.
You know? And I think we'd be happier if George Lucas had retouched it up with good stuff rather than the nimmer, 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 in the, like...
You notice how I've deliberately avoided that topic of conversation entirely. We don't need to talk about the singing dance choreography that they added in Jabba's Palace unnecessarily.
If they had touched that up and made that look better, it would still look great, because it probably looked great when it came out. So it's unfair criticism.
Still, for me personally, but then again, as I've said, a lot of this is completely biased opinion, because I love all things Star Wars. So I am part of the problem that you have being exhausted by Star Wars fanboys. I hold my hands up very high and claim that I am a skewed vision when it comes to Star Wars. I put a blinker over it, purely on nostalgia, particularly with the OG. I'm more critical of everything that comes after. I've always been hugely passionate to the speeder chase.
It's fantastic and I love it.
Oh, well, there we go. We can just end the podcast here.
Yeah.
thank you for your time, everyone. But yeah, I think that leads into Leia introducing herself to little Ewok Wicket. And then finding the rest of the Ewok tribe. And this is where the real 80s fantasy sort of... It kind of got the more Robin Hood vibes with the crew, the merry band in the woods with the merry men and the little woodland bears. And I always feel that we're kind of robbed, because when you think back to what some of the behind-the-scenes conversations were, was that originally... The planet moon of Endor was supposed to be the home planet of the Wookiees.
Yeah, which would have been awesome.
And how different that story would have been with the sort of more tribal, violent Wookiees taking on the Empire than the little teddy bears.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. That would be so something I'd be into watching.
But like, George Lucas is a very good marketing businessman, and he knows that teddy bears are far more marketable than a fair few Chewbacca's.
And, well, I do think, like, this the Ewoks, this, okay, we've had 38 minutes here of, like, contention, you know, me being very miserable, you know, I'm great, I'm back, baby. But, like, this is probably the prime example of what I'm talking about, that it feels like the first film that's more aimed for children. Because, like, the first two, obviously, is this really amazing, unique world that they've created that now has, like, not just affected Star Wars films, but basically sci-fi, you know. So many films want to recapture that, like, New Hope feeling, you know. Guardians of the Galaxy, another podcast that we'll be having out in a few weeks' time, will also, well, it follows that style. They were trying to recapture that sort of feeling.
Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, and A New Hope and Empire, I don't think, are strictly meant for children. You know, there's nothing inherently about those films that I'm like, that's for kids. You know, like, it's now subsequently become like this because of the toy ranges, the mass creation of, like, you know, you've got to collect the AT-AT or the variant of the AT-AT or what, you know, all of that stuff. But
yeah,
initially, I don't think these films were like, we're going to market the SHIT out of this and make as much money as we can.
I don't know. I feel like George Lucas did have an idea of
to
how
just, to market
the toy, it. The toy lines came out roughly because he had a Kenner toy line with all the Star Wars toys very early on, if not in time with the release of the film. I think George Lucas was very aware of the franchise ability, and I think that continued. But to add to your point, I do think that one of the biggest issues with this movie is the conflict within themes. You've got the very, very kiddie Ewoks.
Yes.
But then you've also got the very, very dark Emperor Palpatine. Yeah. And the really dark emotional through line with Luke and Vader.
And you think where we left off with Empire.
And they very much juxtapose in terms of the tone of the film.
And we leave off with Empire. You have Luke having his arm chopped off, his hand chopped off.
Yeah.
The revelation of his dad is this Sith Lord. It's really dark. Like, that is pretty dark. I wouldn't say, kids, let's watch this film where your main character gets his hand chopped off. It's going to be great. Whereas, like, this one, it feels like the Ewoks are the most, like, blatant that we're going to sell this to kids.
Yeah.
This is going to be... Because if it was the Wookiees, it would have felt like... Because they do that in the...
Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith. So clearly there's some marketing there. I still think they could have marketed it, but it would have felt more like like the other three. I think this is the most explicit thing that I think is detriment to the film. Like, the most, like, the other things we just listed is me being my usual, like, positive, pernickety self about films. I think if you're into all of the stuff that I listed, then it's fine. I don't think it's going to break your immersion. Like, Luke's plan in Jabba's palace being a bit stupid, like, that's fine. It's Star Wars. Nobody's really... But this is the first thing I'm like,
I mean, I'm very much inclined to agree with the decision of having the Ewoks. You know, retrospectively, I do enjoy it now from sort of a nostalgic point of view. I do still feel that it very much juxtaposes with the central themes of the film.
Yes.
And it stands very blatant and singled out amongst, because even Jabba's palace, that was quite dark, gritty, and seedy.
Yeah, it was
with comedic sort of bits and pieces put in there, you know, like Salacious Crumb ripping out C-3PO's eye.
Jabba gets choked to death.
Exactly,
like, pretty intense. Like,
it's a lot of tonally dark scenes and themes throughout the whole film, and then you've got these cuddly little teddy bears that initially sort of take you out. And I think as a kid, when I watched this for the first time, even sort of at my age, which I was very young, I wasn't as keen on them.
Yeah.
And I think just over time, it's just become, well, that's just part of Star Wars.
Yeah. It would have been great if when the Empire turned, and this is going to sound really dark, but this is kind of the point, when the Empire turned up to fight the Ewoks, instead of the Ewoks having like a good chance against them, if they were just getting butchered, if they were just getting mashed up, Like, people just getting absolutely butchered left, right, and center. And, like, Leia being like, this was such a bad idea. Why did we do this? These are just giant teddy bears. Like, they're getting shot up out here. Like, that would have been way more, like, realistic.
There are scenes like that, but it never hits as hard.
No, like, there's a bit where there's that little bear poking his dead bear friend, which I more find a bit amusing, if I'm honest. It's like him poking it, being like,
evil man. Evil man. That made me sad as a child.
No, I'm joking. It did make me sad too. It did make me sad. But, like, I would have, like, it's the way them fighting the AT-ATs or AT-STs, which ones?
AT-STs,
yeah. AT-STs. Yeah. And then them throwing stones at guys with helmets on, which are meant to protect them from said stones, and those guys just collapsing. I'm not saying, fine, maybe me saying them getting mashed up and butchered is a bit much, but, like, not them just beating the Empire. I would
putting
have,
up
like,
a little bit less of a fight, because it is, you know, this is the Imperial Empire that has taken over the galaxy.
Yeah.
You think they'd be able to put up a bit more of a
against
a solid fight against teddy bears. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have loved one just to kick one in the face. Bam!
it is, like I say, it's a bit tonally all over the place with these sort of things.
Yeah.
But if we move on in
Forget
terms
the Ewoks.
Of
Forget
move it. On from the Ewoks. Let's get into the third act, the real tasty, juicy bits.
This the best stuff, right? Less negative from me now. This stuff is good.
This is the Star Wars creme de la creme. You know,
it's a trap.
You've got Admiral Akbar literally chewing up the scenery with those sort of lines, but you've got Vader and Luke's conflict have come to a head. Yes. Yeah, they're at a stalemate. Luke's tried to have that meeting with Vader initially. He's given the scene that you discussed earlier where he's given himself up. You know,
I have rewatched this recently in anticipation for this. It's not how I remember it as a kid. I'm just saying, as a kid, all I remember is them just stood in the lift like, duh. Like, it's not like that. It's definitely not like that. But for some reason, my memory is like them just stood being like, it's crazy weather we're having today. You seen those Ewoks? Mad.
It reminds me of the time I killed all those younglings. I mean,
yeah. I'll go out there and do the same. I'll mash them up. Don't you worry.
You would not believe.
Me with killing small things? Easy. Easy. Kids.
Stand back, son.
Watch how it's done.
But, I mean, in nowadays, rather than the kiddie times where you couldn't remember the dialogue, you know, Luke initially tries to reach out to Vader. And I think, as we said about Mark Hamill and Luke's performance in this, feel like James Earl Jones and the physicality of David Prowse comes through here. Because in this initial scene, Luke very confidently tries to reason with Vader. You know, I guess the last confrontation that they had, Luke was very emotional and angsty and very immature, but now he's sort of presenting to him as far more calm, calculated.
Yes.
And with vindiction, I'm making up words now, to bring his father back. He senses there's good with him. Mm-hmm. You know, Obi-Wan and Yoda have said that the only way that you can become a Jedi or fulfill your destiny is to kill and take out your father, and then in doing so, defeat the Emperor. But Luke's coming at him a totally different approach. He's like, no, this isn't the way. I can feel the good in him. I can reach to him. And this is the first time that you see the chink in Vader's armor. Mm-hmm. You see him lowering his guard, and he calls him son. And the very evil Machiavellian dark armored creature that we've seen through these films beforehand has been sort of disarmed, and he's talking to him, and he says things like son, and it's too late for me, which kind of, it's very inward.
That's
like,
great.
It is too late for me.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily too late for you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very internal, and you kind of get that sense of softening in Vader, which then leads into his eventual turning back and redemption, which redemption I feel is a strong term, because it doesn't undo the heinous acts that he's taking place.
Yeah, especially in the prequels.
But I feel like he turns back to the light and...
Just in the nutshell of this one. I guess we'll add the broader context a little bit later. But in this one, there is a redemption arc for Vader. There is.
Yeah. And I feel that this scene in particular stands out as that sort of prelude into what we're going to get further on down the line.
I agree. Whilst, like, what, my memory of it is not how it actually is. I couldn't sum it up better. It's a lot of like character. It's again a bit expositiony, but it's good exposition. Unlike this is an example of like this is good exposition. The rest of this stuff that we've had a bit before, this is not great.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is what exposition should be, because it's actually pushing through the plot and it's showing like the emotional tension between father, son, light, dark, you know, and not just the light and dark that is Luke and Darth Vader, but the darkness that could be in Luke, you know, it's too late for me. Don't you go down that path, you know, don't you become what and I've become.
It's very deliberate in the sense that he's completely isolated in his final confrontation. Mm. You know, the whole rest of the third act until the very end, he's on his own. It's just him, Vader, and Palpatine, the three of them for the entirety of the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Until the very, very end. And then all the while through this is going on, you've got the main conflict on the ground with Han, Leia, Chewbacca, C-3PO, and the Ewoks versus the Stormtroopers taking out the shield generator.
Move on.
And then we've got just one of the whole saga, just one of the best space battles, if that's not one of the best sci-fi.
Stop talking about that crap. Let's get to this.
Like, this is where I was saying, like, everything in the kitchen sink has been thrown in, like, all the special effect tricks have been thrown out for this this space battle. Like, you've got the inner workings of the Death Star with Lando and the Millennium Falcon going through with Wedge in terms of the internals of the spaceship, the dogfight inside. But then you've got the epic proportions of the Death Stars, the Star Destroyers and the Death Star confronting the pitiable little rebel band. And it's just so awesome. Like, the set piece is just fantastic. And there's an initial scene where Lando and the Millennium Falcon are sort of flying in, and just the shot of the TIE fighters coming towards them and sort of fanning out is just amazing. To think that's all miniatures as well.
It's great. You know,
they didn't have the glory of CGI where everything was just sort of fake on a green screen or just on a computer screen. This has all been cultivated, created, and just expert. This is people at the height of their craft, you know, making these amazing set pieces.
I think
this one's the culmination of all that.
Totally. I mean, it looks fantastic. Like, you know, for the issues that we've had before, this space battle really makes up. Even for the stuff, the issues that are happening coinciding with the bloody Ewoks, this space battle makes up for that crap on the ground.
Yeah,
like it's so epic in proportion. Like, you know, I can't really add much to it. It is like, again, I think it's some of the blueprints that you see for future sci-fi space battles. Yeah. And I actually think there's not many that have really replicated that.
No.
Like, I'm trying to think, and I'm like, I can't really think of anything that's quite like that. Because even the other Star Wars films, I don't think have got near that sort of epicness. I think, you know, Revenge of the Sith kind of misses the point. You know, with the, this is where the fun begins. Like,
but of the saga, that's probably the closest to
it. It's the closest to it, I agree.
That could sort of match that scale, because you've got A New Hope, which is very much just plucky little group of X-Wings versus the might of the Death Star.
That's a bit more like
Empire Strikes Back. You've got the pretty epic scene on Hoth with the AT-ATs.
I mean, that's amazing.
The ground troops. That's very ground oriented.
That's a ground oriented. Yeah, we're talking space battles. But get out of here, Empire.
Get out of here, Hoth.
You're definitely better than the Ewoks, but get out of here. Wish the Ewoks was under one of the AT-AT's feet.
Well, they get under a few AT-STs. Yeah, you get the magnitude of what's going on with the space battles and this, the Star Destroyers, particularly the big Executor one.
Yeah. When they like crash as well.
Yeah, and it crashes down into the Death Star. It's such an amazing scene.
I'm trying to think of anything like that in cinema for space sci-fi battles.
Very few sort of get hit close to the mark, and very few can come to my memory, really. I can't think of anything that's really trumped that.
I bet Star Trek has tried to do something like that, but I really can't think of anything in Star Trek.
Nothing really. In Star Trek, I
like Star Trek, but it's not that, is it? It's more philosophical and like...
And Star Trek has always been kind of ship to ship.
Yes.
Rather than...
Yeah. Like huge armadas and
armadas, like, because these are fleets of ships attacking each other. While Star Trek's been, you get a few sort of larger set pieces, but more often than not, it's trying to be strategic and strategy, or not strategy, but sort of technical aspects of how to defeat a singular adversary.
Yes, and I do think I'm not saying that Star Wars isn't philosophical in places, but like Star Trek is far more like, I don't want to say like, oh, it's highbrow, because it's not. What I'm saying is it's like, I think it's more the dialogue that it tries to focus on rather than the huge action sequences. But I think that may be budgetary constraints anyway with Star Trek. It's not known for having huge budgets and things like that. But yeah, other big franchises, I really can't think of these huge giant space battle set like pieces that also have these like huge explosions and crashes and like, yeah, I can't think of anything really that compares. It's outstanding, really. It is really, and it is the Star Wars. We are seeing what the culmination of what that is, you know, and
it's what it's all about.
Yeah, and it's a shame because the sequels, which are pretty bad, just really don't capture that. They really, really don't even come close to how awesome. And even though the prequels are also not great, but not as bad, at least Revenge of the Sith gets close. But this is still great. This is still just trumps them all.
And I think, you know, sort of moving on from that, you've got what personally is my favorite and kind of leads into our favorite parts in the next bit is the Vader, Palpatine, and Luke confrontation. Like, for me, this is sort of what you're waiting for. This is, you know, Ian McDiarmid as Emperor Palpatine is just, he's never been as good as he was in this one. I mean, he's always fantastic. He always chews up the scenery.
Oh, yeah.
Even in Rise of Skywalker, he's a highlight. I don't think he should have been there.
No.
But when he is there, he's great.
When he's in his little throne for his little body.
Exactly. But this is peak Palpatine.
Yeah. And he loves it. And he's having the time of
his life. Yeah.
Yeah. He's so. And it's the one thing about the prequels that I think is actually like great is him just like. I can't put it better than like Red Letter Media did in their like reviews of the prequels. He's just so good as Emperor. Yeah. If there's somebody who's like born to play a role, that's your man.
Yeah.
Just he loves it. He just loves it. Yeah. So good. So good.
And I think the emotional struggle of Luke, you know, he's pushed to his ebb with Palpatine sort of goading him throughout his whole conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, he's tried to reach Vader. He's confident that his father's not going to take him out and bring him to the Emperor. You know, he doesn't have that fulfilled. So he's on an uneven footing. He's in the belly of the beast, quite figuratively and literally, inside the big Death Star. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, his planning is not great. He's very...
he's not the best at planning. He's not the
But I think... This sort of culminates his arc because he's more mature, he's more forthright, he's becoming the hero, but it's the character growth that he's still very much inherently that farm boy with the hope of adventure. You know, he's gone here in the Death Star purely on faith and hope that his father's going to come back round and be redeemed. Mm. That's his only goal here. He's not initially trying to take him out, mm-hmm. or defeat the Emperor in any other way than trying to redeem his father. His whole mission here is to try and get through to his father and redeem him, because ultimately, as he says to the Palpatine himself, you know, soon we're going to be dead. Mm-hmm. I mean, he kind of gives the game away that they're trying to blow up the Death Star.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion that his main through line here is to try and redeem Vader. Mm. And, you know, Palpatine's goading him. He sort of tells him, yeah, I was aware. I was the Bothans. No one died. Yeah. I just gave the information away.
I'm the Bothan. That's the twist.
I'm the Bothan now.
Yeah, I'm the Bothan now.
And he's like, no, you know, with this Death Star, it's not inert. It's fully operational.
Surprise,
MF. I'm going to start blowing ships up out of the sky.
Yes.
I've sent a legion of my best troops down to the planet moon of Endor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're doomed. And all you can do is take me out. And that's exactly what I want you to do. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you give into that rage, you're mine. Dark side and you're mine. So it's this fortitude that Luke Skywalker tries to, you know, he's trying to fight against it. And there's that moment where the goading, he gives in and he picks up his lightsaber and he goes for the kill.
Such a great shot where
the two lightsabers clashing.
And the Emperor's just grinning away.
And he's cackling away.
Yeah, because it's everything he wanted. You know, he's got what his plan was. Great cinematography there. Great shot. I think this scene has some of the best cinematography in it.
Yes.
Like when Luke is underneath the stairs, hiding away, just under the stairs. And don't look at me. Don't look at me, Dad. I'm under the stairs.
You cannot hide forever, Luke. Well, it's not a very big space, so I'll find you eventually.
I'll eventually find you. If anything, I think that's you under the stairs.
In fact, I'm surprised I haven't found you already.
Yeah, I really
a few square feet around here.
I need to clean these glasses. These helmets are really dirty. He's like stood, and you have the shadow over one side of his face and the light on the other. It's just really nice cinematography tricks like that, you know, portray the tension within Luke without just like saying it, which is something I think the other films just, you know, and it's that stuff that makes me go, was that intentional or was that just lucky? Because the films afterwards, I'm like, you've lost your subtlety here, like with Anakin. Well, the Jedi are evil to me. Like, it's just bad dialogue. Whereas in this, it's just subtle stuff like that that I'm like.
It's the show don't tell, isn't it? You know, he's literally casting opposing bright light and dark shadow.
It's really good.
Yeah. You know? And it's purely a metaphor for the internal struggle he's going through, because he's trying not to give in whilst putting all his effort into trying to reach out to his father.
Yes.
And it's only in that scene where Vader finally pushes him with the threat to Leia. It's like, well, you know, you might be a lost cause, but now we know there's your sister out there. We're going to push that.
And then Luke know he was his sister.
I think this is a point of contention where you kind of have to review the dialogue, at least in Revenge of the Sith. And I know that's your favorite thing to do.
Yeah, because I have way too much time. I have nothing going on in my life, guys.
But so me being the nerd that I am, I kind of recall most, if not all, the dialogue. Now, Padme never stipulates what she's pregnant with, just that she's pregnant. So there's
children, for God's sake.
I just had a very large space Taco Bell.
Yeah. I'm pregnant. Oh, I'm so excited. No, I just really need to poop. That's what I call pooping.
And I'm going to lose the will to live whilst doing it. But so she never actually stipulates
what Elvis
says that that she's pregnant with twins, and I feel like that's very deliberate, because then the idea is that also Leia, her name was Leia Organa,
you
know, so she was adopted by Bail Organa on Alderaan. So you know, they spent more effort in concealing her identity than Luke, who was literally given the same surname. You know, Skywalker? Well, that's a very rare name.
What a coincidence.
What a coinkydink. So I don't think it was ever revealed to Vader, and I guess initially, until Luke sprung about, he didn't even know he had a kid that survived. So I think not initially, just on dialogue basis, but I guess you could say that, well, it's in space, you know, surely they'd have the technology to just say, oh, she's pregnant with twins. But yeah, let's not do that deep dive.
Because
if you start pulling at threads, I'm sure you could unravel a whole bunch of stuff.
But that, maybe, yeah, that's kind of the point, isn't it?
No, no, not for Star Wars. A space wizard did it.
You're one of them. You've got, you know what? Credit to you. You've lasted an hour without just going, the Force, Ian. The Force is the answer. And for this one, you've pulled out, it's the Force.
I'm joking. I agree. But I mean, it is...
It doesn't ruin the scene. I'm just going to say, it doesn't... The scene is not ruined by it. It's more the continuity of the entire saga that's affected by it. It's, the scene's still great, and it makes sense, Luke's rage, you know, him releasing it all, smashing, like, his, you know, Darth Vader, his hand comes off, you know, him realizing, you know, I am becoming what my father has become,
yeah,
you know, and then just one of the best lines in all of cinema, I am a Jedi like my father before me. I'm like, yes, every time. I'm like, that is badass. So, like, it's a great scene, but I guess that continuity issue does affect the entire saga a lot, more so than I think her being like, I remember my mother, she was sad. Like, I think that, like, is again a bit of a weird continuity thing, but, like, you know, I can kind of forgive that. Maybe Leia's, like, got false memories. It happens. People have false memories. It's, you know, it happens all the time. But this, him not knowing it's his daughter, but then knowing it's his daughter and being like, I'm just going, you know, she's there.
Well, I feel it's more along the lines of, and this is not me trying to explain it away, but I in a way
force,
it is.
You know, it's
no. I feel it's more along the lines of, you know, if you're not presented with the facts straight up, you're not going to necessarily know about it. You know, so if you don't necessarily know you have twins and you think, oh, she's pregnant and she died, therefore I don't know I have kids at all, up until the point you've got the one with your surname that is literally put right in front of you.
Yeah, yeah. So you'll be,
and
like, yeah.
He becomes the public figure, you know, because Palpatine knew who he was. He was the infamous Skywalker that blew up the Death Star. Mm-hmm. But Leia Organa, she's always been in the public eye as being Bail Organa's daughter. So, and again, he's so rage focused, he's not really thinking about the wider scope of who might be related to him, because if you also put into context, he never goes to sort of finish off the job with Uncle Owen, because retroactively they find out that he's his brother and or stepbrother. And you think, you know, he never goes back to Tatooine, so it's kind of the perfect place to hide Luke. But Leia, you know, she obviously, Bail takes her on, but I think you could kind of excuse it by the point that he didn't know, because it was never obvious enough. Now, I guess if you went the Force route, you could say, oh, well, maybe he should have sensed her. But if Leia also had no clue and she hadn't at that point shown any Force sensitivity, then again, there's nothing really to connect to, whilst Luke was right there in front of him. And it's only in that moment where Luke's thinking about her. And really, it's Obi-Wan's fault, which is kind of what Darth Vader says.
So, like, this is jumping through some hoops here, man. I'm like, I'm kind of a bit lost. I kind of was like, and he's going to the, and the, do you know the person, the meme of the person like with lots of maths going around their head? And they're just sat there.
That's the hangover.
Me. Yeah, I'm like.
This all makes sense in the Star Wars mind, but you're blind.
I'm like, what? Anyway, it's a continuity issue. It's fine. It affects the trilogy or the saga, all of it, but it doesn't affect this scene. I don't think it affects this scene that much. It's just me being like...
Pernickety.
Well, not pernickety. I think it's a big thing, but like, it is more to do the saga. If we were doing an episode on like the Star Wars saga, which would include the prequels, the original and the sequels, I think we'd have more issues than just this continuity issue. Like, I think this would become, who cares, it's fine. With the other problems that those films have, I think we'd be like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just the Force did it. It's fine. Forget that.
Well, I'd say I'm in the reverse catalog of you. I would say that the Leia remembering her mother scene is more continuity issue than Vader then in that moment realizing okay. that she's.
I mean, they're both not daughter. Great. They're both not great. I think that scene with Leia and Luke is not a great scene. I don't think it's very good. But I kind of always knew we were siblings, and I really enjoyed getting off with you. And you're like, oh God,
spaceman rules.
Turn it off. Turn it off.
Who sets the rules in space, man?
I mean, we should.
We should put the ground rules now.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
It's wrong.
Wrong.
Anyway.
But let's go back either way, that promotes him to have that final last bout of rage. And as you say, he comes to the realization in that moment that, yes, the dark side is stronger in the sense of it can help you physically overcome your adversary and take down Vader, but also follow that path and corrupt yourself completely. Mm. And he notices, and it kind of harkens back to The Empire Strikes Back, where he has that vision of seeing his face in Darth Vader's mask.
Yeah.
He looks down at his robot hand.
Which was weird and trippy.
Yeah, exactly. And he sees his robot hand and then sees the hand he's just cut off Vader with the circuitry and things. Mm. And it's very reminiscent of that scene where he's like, yes, I am in this moment becoming.
Yeah, actually, I've never really thought about that until you just said that. Because yeah, I've always thought that scene in Empire was like kind of trippy. Although I do like the idea that it's bigger Luke. I like that. The bigger for it. We won't get into bigger Luke now, but if anybody wants, me and Toby know, but if you want to know about bigger Luke, just look it up. I think the Weekly Planet do a whole video on bigger Luke. So go and watch bigger Luke and how Luke Skywalker kills bigger Luke in this scene. So, but I actually, now that you've said that, that's kind of made that scene in Empire even better.
Yeah.
Because I've always thought that was a weird, trippy scene. I mean, I get what they're trying to say there, that, you know, you can become that monster. But now that you've said, oh, yeah, no, it parallels that scene where that happens. That makes this scene even better and that scene better. Thank you, Toby. Thank you for bringing that into my life.
Well, I feel like it, like I said, it kind of brings that moment to a close. And it kind of allows him to, and I guess us as the viewers, retroactively or however in the moment, you kind of get a close to that narrative. Is that's what that message was trying to tell me,
that I
will become bigger Luke. I will become my father, but the wrong version of my father.
Yes.
And in that moment he comes to that realization, no, that's not the way to do this. We can't, the only way to beat our adversary in this point is to give ourselves over and take a non-combative route. So like you say, he throws down his weapon and he says, nope, I'm not going to kill anybody. I'm not going to kill my dad. I'm not going to kill you. You've lost what you wanted right now. You've lost. I'm a Jedi like my father before me.
That's
the return of the Jedi. That's, you know, the antithesis of what the Jedi are supposed to be.
Great.
And it's in direct conflict to what Yoda and Obi-Wan were trying to tell him. It's like, you have to fight. You have to kill your father.
Yes. It's like such a great line. And it's like,
and he's paved his own way.
All of the great stuff in this film, which obviously I've criticized a lot, the stuff that's just kind of like meh. But the really good stuff is Luke. Like, we see Luke at the beginning, Gamora, the guard, he's choking him. That's a Sith thing to do. He's like, there's a tension between, is he a Jedi? Is he going to fall to the dark side? It's done really well, that conversation. And then in that moment, and even the Yoda being like, yeah, you're going to have to like kill him, mate. Don't know what to tell you. I'm disappearing into the Force. Bye. It doesn't feel like what a Jedi would want. Like, it doesn't feel like, even like from Yoda, if I was Luke before he faded away, I would have been like, that's kind of messed up, man. Like, I'm not going to lie, that doesn't sound like a Jedi thing to do. Yoda's like, don't know what to tell you. Anyway,
Obi-Wan was saying in the movie before this that they were peaceful protectors of of justice around the galaxy. And you're telling me to mess up my dad? That's wrong, man.
Yoda's
That's
like, wrong. I'm already faded away. Bye. Don't think about it.
Just kill your dad.
Just kill your dad. But that moment where he throws down the lightsaber is like, he's conquered that dark side of him, you know, and that's why, kids, the sequel trilogy do a massive turd on this character.
we'll get to that. We'll get to the lasting legacy of this. But, but that then leads into Vader having this revelation.
Yes.
And you know, this moment just sort of spearheads the tail end of this conflict. You know, Palpatine shows his final last draw. He's like, you know, sure, fine, have it your way, Jedi.
I've got lightning hands.
I'm going to be shooting the lightning out my fingertips and Fire. Be killing you slowly. And the scene with Vader, you know, he's slowly shuffled up behind Palpatine, just watching him electrocute his son. Probably a little bit too long. You know,
it's like, no, you did cut off my hand.
I was like, I'm going to wait just a touch. But just a touch. You've got that. No dialogue, and I'm not talking about special edition. That edition of No was just awful. But the original, where you've just got just this amazing score from John Williams.
Yeah.
Which I haven't said enough about, but the Return of the Jedi soundtrack is just phenomenal. Like, it's all fantastic. Of John Williams' work is amazing, but just that score, the build up of like Luke screaming, but just you don't need any words to see and read what Vader's thinking, and it's just the panning looks between Luke and Emperor Palpatine.
Yes,
and then you know he's made the decision. I'm saving my son, and that's the moment Anakin is. Saved. I wouldn't say redeemed. No. He's saved. Luke saves him in that moment.
So much
he shows him emotion. What the true Jedi is about.
So much emotion on a mask.
Like, exactly, yeah.
It's genuinely, I'm not just saying that as to be like, oh, Ian's being a classic facetious Ian again. There is so much emotion shown by the score behind with the mask just turning back and forth, seeing what's happening, and the music swirling, and you can tell what he's thinking. Because of the musical score. So John Williams, outstanding. You made Darth Vader's mask have emotion by having such a beautiful score.
But even David Prowse's physicality to the role.
You
know, he's mask work is a hard thing to say and take it seriously. But I guess it's a physicality performance that you know, before it was always about showing how big and imposing Vader was, but there's so many scenes in this, particularly with him and Luke, which is predominantly the majority of the scenes that he has in this, where he's slowly shrinking and becoming more vulnerable in his movements, and just everything seems more
human.
You can tell by his physicality that he's coming round to Luke. Yeah. And I think, like you say, this is sort of the precipice of that, where you see that and everything around it is just so impactful. And then he three-pointers Emperor Palpatine down into the reactor shaft.
Kobe.
Yeah. It's good. I think I'm mixing up my sports there, but so Palpatine goes for his long drop, and all the while Lando and crew are flying through the Death Star, make the last shot. Boom.
Yeah.
And we're out. Like, Luke gets out on the shuttle to Dideran after a really sort of sentimental scene with Vader.
Great.
Which kind of...
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it kind of leads a little bit in the difficulty about how Leia doesn't have her reconciliation with Vader.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the scene where he says, tell your sister you were right.
Tell your sister. Sorry, I tortured her. My mistake, mate.
Yeah, but I was good in the long run. Yeah. He tortured me, so not that good.
Yeah, not great.
So it's a bit of a it's a very sentimental scene. It's poignant poignant for Luke and Vader, but the layer of it all is a little bit more awkward.
But what I like about that scene, again, it's just background stuff. The Empire is completely falling apart, and you know Luke's carrying Darth Vader. People know who Darth Vader is in the Empire. You know, I know there's like layers to this, and as Eddie Izzard has multiple times done on his stand up with the canteen, you know, maybe some people don't know who Darth Vader is, but I feel like a lot of people would. And what I like is they're running around just chaotic. Nobody cares. Literally nobody cares that Darth Vader is being carried along, because once it's all crumbling, you know, everybody cares for themselves just to get out.
Yeah.
And like there's just chaos behind them. And that I liked that a lot. Just I think that was intentionally done. That it's like, otherwise you wouldn't have had any extras there. Yeah. And it adds a lot to that scene, just to have them being like, "We got to get the hell out of here." Like, I don't care about our leaders. I do not care. We just need to get the hell out of this place. So I like that. And again, great emotional payoff for Luke and Darth Vader, which has been predominantly the pushing factor of the films. But it does feel a bit harsh on Leia, a bit, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would reconcile that, but like...
No, well, I think that in itself is something you obviously wouldn't get, and now we never will.
No.
Is you kind of need to... Do you need to, but at least have it more addressed? Now, that they've had books where they had quite an interesting book, actually before the prequels, and I'm not going to go too deep dive into it, but it's called Star Wars Aftermath, and it's sort of set roughly shortly after the events of the Battle of Endor and the Death Star blowing up, and there's the final fight on Jakku, where sort of it's the last Empire big fight, and the rebellion sort of taking them out, but then it's the formation of the New Republic, and kind of why Leia's not leading this is because while she's the political figure, it becomes a revelation that she's the daughter of Vader, and it sort of deals with more of her reconciliation with her as or with him as his her father, and her not being able to forgive him, and kind of owning that side to it. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, cool that he turned for Luke, but that's not. That's not the father that I recognize. You know, my father was Bail Organa.
And that's cool. I think that's good.
It's a cool storyline.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think in light of it not being addressed in the film, it's good that you've got that in book format as an addendum or an addition. So you can take it at your own leisure.
They could have done that in this film with that weird dialogue in the tree where they
could have done.
She could have been like, when he's like revelation of like we're brother and sister, instead of her hearing her being like, I kind of always knew that, and that's why I macked off with you. It could have been like, I didn't know that, but you still need to kill Darth Vader. He's not my father, you know. Like, he's not, you know, even whatever he was is dead now. You know, he needs to be killed. You know, that would have been interesting because, like, she has that tension of, like, he's not my father. Bail Organa's my father. Darth Vader is never my father. And, you know, and then that would have been interesting to have Luke have tension with Leia. And instead, it's just weird, you know? Like,
well, it's where it sort of boils down to what we're saying. It's almost two films.
Yeah.
That I guess the end of Empire Strikes Back kind of put them in a corner of where the story could have taken, because you kind of had, in terms of getting your heroes back together, you had to have them go get Han Solo.
Yes.
To sort of get the crew and the band back together. But the sort of the narrative of that took up so much of the film. Sort of more of the heavier story beats had to kind of take a back foot on that, which is where I think that, whilst we both agree the third act is definitely the strongest part of the film.
It is, yeah.
And some of the best bit of the film. You kind of rob yourself of a lot more of the ideas that come sprouted up in that third act, or at least the second act, that wasn't allowed time to flesh out.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Leia's being the... Because that's a very sort of shooed in retcon. And I'm the first to admit, it's accepted now, but at the same time, it's still very shoehorned in, and it sort of comes out of nowhere. And I think sort of moving into sort of the next topic I want to talk about is, I think I was going to talk more about our favorite parts and our least favorite parts, but I think we've kind of touched on that as we've gone through. Yeah. So I think if we think about sort of how it's had a lasting effect on the overall saga.
Oh, we're skipping the end.
Oh, you want to go through the celebration?
Well, I thought
you moving forward with the pet.
Well, it literally takes a second. I just like Lando clapping out of time. That's great. I love that.
Go for it. Well, yeah. So
just Lando's clapping out of time. You have
Vader's funeral, where it's a solo event, and then you get the big Ewok celebration. And this is where I kind of think that the new edition actually adds a little bit, where you get the other planets celebrations at the same time, where it broadens the scope of the galactic conflict, that now the Emperor and the Death Star's gone. You know, Tatooine celebrating, Coruscant celebrating, even Naboo. Now, I guess Naboo was included after the prequels, but it broadens the scope of how the Empire had that far-reaching claw. Mm-hmm. And it allowed everyone to sort of celebrate in tandem. And
yeah,
I appreciate that addition. That's where I think that addition was good, rather than some of the other bits like Ewok blinking. That's just not necessary.
Yeah, it's weird. But it's fine. It's fine. I completely get what you're saying there. You know, I don't think it adds nor detracts anything for me. It's not bad. Nor do I go, oh, this is made. It's fine. Like, I think the ending to the film's fine. Like, it's the conclusion you kind of need after that, don't you? You need that cathartic sort of celebration. So, yeah, no, it's fine. I just like Lando clapping. Just he's like, yeah, yeah, in the back.
I can't say I ever noticed.
Oh, really? I know he's clapping, but
I never realized it. He was out of tune.
Yeah, it's a big meme online. It's just him clapping away. Like, he's having a great time.
I'll have to look at that. I was too busy looking at Hayden Christensen's inclusion. Which I get George Lucas' rationale, but I feel that it's a bit of a slap in the face for Sebastian Shaw, who was the OG Anakin.
Also, why would he come back as a younger version? Alan McGuinness can't come back as a younger Yoda. Still looks like a weird levery thing. Like, why can't? What are you talking about? Why?
Well, I'm not going to excuse this, but I will explain George Lucas's rationale in that.
Oh, now, the man's insane. That's his rationale.
Well, there is that, but there's all his explanation for it is that. The at force. That point, yeah, the wizard did it. But it's the idea is that was the last point that he was truly Anakin. That's where Vader had killed that person that was Anakin. So
such crap.
I know.
I had to censor myself then. I was about to just say that.
I know what you were about to say.
Oh, my Lord.
That is not my explanation. That is verbatim George Lucas. His explanation was that was the last point that Anakin was truly Anakin. And after Vader killed him, he was not that anymore. So the Sebastian Shaw was the legacy of Vader. So to have him retroactively look like Hayden Christensen was technically the idea that he would look like he was as he was last Anakin.
Shut up, George. That's what I mean. Shut up. Like
the man has had many genius ideas, but he's also got a little bit off the rails.
Yeah. A little bit. Prequels, Jesus. We should have our own episode on the prequels.
I don't think I want to be there with you for that. I feel like I'll probably get upset.
I don't want to be your friend anymore.
I need Chris to chaperone this.
Just shut up, George. Shut up. That's what I have to say to that. It's stupid. So dumb. Okay, cool. That's everything. So what were you going to say, I guess, the lasting legacy?
Well, I think I kind of wanted to see what your thoughts were. I think I get the gist of. And what you think that what Return of the Jedi would have had in terms of an influence on, I guess, the prequels and then moving forward into the sequels. Because I guess it's probably more important about the sequels than it is with the prequels.
I think Return of the Jedi... I stand by my C+ talking through this. I don't think it's a bad film. I think it's a broadly good film. But it's closer broadly fine. Because, you know, I have a good time with this. Its legacy, though, I think is kind of like the bad stuff that I don't like with this film.
Yes.
Becomes the norm in Star Wars. And, like... the Ewok stuff, the childish nature of it, the tone issues, they kind of like lose all of the nuance that the good stuff has.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like George Lucas. It's weird. I was talking about this today with a colleague at university who loves sci-fi. It's kind of like George Lucas when he made these three, and you probably know more about this than I do, but it feels like George Lucas has probably has more people being like no in the original trilogy, whereas I feel like with the prequels,
what sort of shutting down the more wacky ideas,
not shutting down, but at least like working with him. Like I've read somewhere that he wanted Han Solo to be like an alien thing, and somebody was like, that's not the best idea, like we should do something else. And then by working with people, he was able to create these three films. Whereas when you look at the behind the scenes of the prequels, people are just like, yeah, that's great, yeah, that's really good. And I feel
he was given sort of unfiltered free reign,
whereas I feel Return, we're getting close to that, but but yeah. It's still got some filter there that it's like, nah, we got with this, we got a some of this. And I'm not saying George Lucas didn't come up with like the battle between Darth Vader and Luke. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying somebody else was like, you should do this, and all of the stupid stuff was him. I'm saying like they probably were both him, but there was less people being like, the Ewoks are a bit dumb, George, we shouldn't do that. And more people being like, yeah, that's great, which is what you see in the prequels. That yeah. People are just like, yeah, it's great, it's great, it's great.
Well, I think another thing with the prequels before we go to the sequels is mm-hmm. that, because it's interesting you had that, because I have exactly the same take.
Yes.
I think in terms of the lasting legacy of Star Wars, the prequels are a... I think one of the issues with him is that he's a great story crafter. I think he's got a phenomenal world building
yep.
mind.
Yep.
I think where he falls short as a creator is the dialogue and his direction in certain scenes.
Yes.
I think particularly, I think there's a quote from Han Solo where it says, George, you can write this stuff, but you can't say it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a testament to the prequels, because I there is a lot of dialogue that just needed someone to filter it for him and make it a little bit more
yeah
readable, because you've got a whole host of really good actors
mm-hmm.
to play these characters, and even the best actors, because I don't want to put it all on Hayden Christensen, because I think he did the best he could with what he had.
Yeah,
but even like heavier hitting actors like Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman,
yep.
they had some stinker of delivery
and,
as well.
And Liam Neeson as well.
And Liam Neeson. Yeah. You know, they had some stinkers of lines to, mm-hmm. to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where George Lucas is slightly weaker,
mm-hmm.
Where it's the script and sometimes the direction. Because A New Hope was a string of luck.
Mm-hmm.
But even that has some hokey dialogue that's not aged as well. But Empire Strikes Back, it's where everything sort of matured. It's got his story, but the dialogue and the direction is helmed by other creatives, which is where you say, you know, he's got more people creatively working with him.
Yes.
Whilst the prequels, it's him sort of unbound.
Yeah.
And then the sequels.
Well.
It's very much what you said, where the sequel, it's all the worst parts. It's all the worst parts of Return of the Jedi,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
where... It seems to have watched Return of the Jedi almost only,
mm-hmm.
and it's taken all the negative parts that we've discussed about Return of the Jedi,
mm.
you know, the retcons, the rehashing and revisiting old planets and things like that. The
dumb, like, plans.
Exactly. Like these are the things that seem to be picked up on and brought forward into the sequels, which
yeah,
they're the weaker aspects of this film.
Mm-hmm. The worst aspects.
The previous one.
Like,
yeah,
legitimately
exactly.
The worst aspects. Like, I'll give George Lucas his credit where credit's due in terms of, like, the prequels, which, you know, Lord knows before the sequels came out, I would have been like, the prequels are some of the worst things ever made. I think now having the sequels, they are some of the worst things ever made. Whereas, like, the prequels, I think he wanted... He has this like grand vision of a space opera, and it just went too far. It just went too far. And it just like all the space Senate crap and all of that, just like nobody's interested in that, George. Like nobody cares. Like you've made it boring. Whereas like, but at least there was some elements, like, as we said, Revenge of the Sith, I don't like the dialogue, the this is where the fun begins. But the actual like cinematography, the special effects of that space battle is as close as we get, you know, to what we have in Return of Jedi. But the sequels are just cold, lifeless crap that just go, oh, there's this cute thing that like people will buy, like the Ewoks, let's get those weird duck things in there, they're gonna need to be sold, like
the porgs.
Why do you know that? Like, why do you see those films?
I know it just because it's Star Wars. I can't help myself. Like, it stays there forever. It's like glue. It's Star Wars knowledge glue.
And it's like the stupid crap with Rey and the blade, and it's syncing up to where the Death Star's crashed. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? What is this?
Why is there that much of an explode? If you see Return of the Jedi and you see that Death Star explode, there's no big enough chunk, particularly not the bloody Emperor Palpatine's throne room to be as salvageably intact as it is in
Rise
of the Skywalker.
But it's kind of like the Jabba Palace, like me talking about that doesn't really make any sense, but dialed even worse, because at least Jabba's Palace, there's a defense. As you said, it could have been ad hocly put together. I still think that's a bit loose, but fine. It's really not that much of a, I'm going to dislike this film because of that. I still have fun. But it's like they took all of that stuff and went, this is the stuff they liked, right? And it's like, no one liked any of this crap. Like, no one liked this.
Well, it took the message, but it picked up the wrong...
And they ruined Luke. They ruin Luke.
Yeah.
They ruin Luke.
When you take the monumental scenes that we discussed regarding Luke Skywalker, and then just to totally take the polarizing opposite direction.
Yeah, why would he do that? Why would he go,
it's terrible.
My nephew has one little doubt of the dark side. I'm going to try and murder
him. He has a bad dream.
Yeah, whereas his dad killed younglings. Yeah. He was going to kill the Ewoks. We just said he was. Like, he was going to do that.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I've still got faith that he could be redeemed. But my nephew, the son of both my sister and my best friend, I don't have enough faith in.
And also, dude, you may have taken some mushrooms or something. You may have just had a weird dream. Just forget about it. Okay, fair enough.
Sleep on it. Don't just... instinctively act on your lightsaber.
Yeah. Also,
hovering over him.
Also, not to be that guy, but if you are gonna kill him, just kill him.
Yeah.
Don't stand over him like that. Like, just. Yeah.
Also,
just
why are you watching him sleep?
Yeah, there's so many weird. They just ruined.
I'd be very uncomfortable if my uncle just like walked into my. That's the start of a very dark story right there. God. You know, my uncle walks into my room and just watches me sleep for a few minutes.
Jesus Christ.
And then retroactively thinks, he's having a. He looks like he's having a bad dream.
Yeah.
I better kill him.
I better kill him.
You know, who thought that? That, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
I didn't want to go into a sequel bash, but it was more along the lines. I wanted to see if we were on the same.
We are on the same. We are.
They
exactly
picked
the
up
same.
The wrong
but
messages
they ruined,
from this movie.
In terms of the legacy of this film, one of the great things about this film is that scene where he is, I am a Jedi like my father before me. That is the perfect redemption. And they went, let's just make him into a milk drinking weird dude. Like, let's
and then
just do
somehow
that.
Palpatine returns. Ultimately just completely negating Vader's
revealed,
last sacrifice.
Revealed on Fortnite.
Yeah.
That's where we're at, guys. That's where Star Wars at.
And I remember playing that and being like, wow, this is it. this is where it all leads up to.
This is where it ends.
Somehow Palpatine. And they don't explain it in Fortnite.
They don't explain it in Star Wars. They don't
know. They throw the line in, somehow Palpatine returns, and that's enough. Yeah. Right.
Done.
Well, thank you very much for this.
Before we part ways.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I have a little thing that in my scrolling on Star Wars like pages as we've been talking to help me guide my way through this film. I found, you said May the 4th be with you at the beginning.
May the 4th be with you, yeah.
And you said Revenge of the 5th.
Revenge of the 5th, yeah.
This is great. You're going to love this. Listeners, this is for you.
If you're giving me more days.
I have May the 4th be with you. There's always a bigger 5th. Revenge of the 6th.
Okay.
I am the 7th.
Okay. Okay.
I find your lack of the 8th disturbing.
Nice.
A 9th addition to my collection. It's treason 10.
Oh, God.
And then the best one, this is the May.
This is the May. So it just, this is the May just covers the entirety.
That's fine.
So
this
May,
is
I mean, I've adopted May as the Star Wars month anyway. Yeah. So
well,
it's been a good month.
This is the May.
This is the May. And with that, thank you very much, Ian. It's been a blast.
It's always a pleasure.
major conflicting
I'm never talking to you ever again.
But conflict is the spice of life. So thank you.
You've ruined my favorite film.
No, Empire Strikes Back.
Empire's.
I'll never talk to you about that one though.
No, I love Empire. Like that's one of my favorite films. Like it's that I very little wrong with that. And in fact, the only thing I found weird was the weird face cut off scene. But I either like it connecting to this one or bigger Luke. So it's all answers. So it's all good.
Fabulous. Well, thank you very much, Ian, and thank you very much, listeners. And as I said, if you liked what you heard today, listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and SoundCloud. And for that, thank you very much, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.